If you've been holding altcoins, it's been a rough beginning of the year. The last 5 weeks have been absolutely brutal. But the good news is that we may actually have some hope on the horizon. We may actually have an increase into liquidity, which may actually cause a recovery in the altcoins. I'm going to show you where that increase in liquidity is coming from. And I'm going to show you just how high the altcoins can actually go. So it's going to be quite big. Also, I want to talk a little bit about this over here. I don't know if you guys have been watching, but there's been a massive short buildup in ETH. Speculators have built the largest ETH position in history. I mean, if you're talking about the second biggest asset on the market and you're talking about a massive short position, one of two things can happen. Either the shorters are right, in which case the asset is about to get annihilated, or the shorters are wrong, and that means we could have the ultimate short squeeze. So which ones are going to be? Tell me in the comments which ones it's going to be. I'll show you the data later in the show, and we can make a call together whether this is like the last chance to get out of your ETH, or whether this is like the ultimate buying opportunity. So if that sounds good to you, then you know what to do. Join the 1.1555 million subscribers that are already part of the fam, and let's get the show on the road, guys. We have a very important VIP guest in the studio today. He's here all the way from Miami. Adrian, come say hello to the people, bro. Yeah, gotta say hi. Come on. Adrian is our producer, the one that travels with us all the time. He makes all the good shows. He's here from Miami. Everyone says he looks like my brother.
We do. Been with this guy since 2017. There's no better person in the business.
Oh, there we go, bro. There we go. So Adrian's here in the studio with us. We've got all the researchers here. Everybody's here in the studio. We're going to make a big show. If you're not already subscribed, subscribe. If you are subscribed, obliterate the like button. I'm going to show you why there could be like a mini alt season coming up soon, which may carry us into the next alt season, the big alt season. Also, we've got to talk about these short positions on Ethereum. What you don't want is you don't want the second biggest asset in an asset class becoming like the speculative index coin of the asset class. And we've got to talk about why that's actually happening. So lots to talk about today. Also some big events this week. We've got inflation coming up this week. Inflation, a lot is on the line with this inflation, with these inflation numbers. So we're going to talk about inflation coming up this week. Lots to talk about today. But I think the first thing we should talk about is we should talk about Bitcoin. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but if you look at like the last 3 days, the Bitcoin price has held at exactly 96,500. It's like, this is what you call perfect price equilibrium. Nothing can move the price of Bitcoin, not even Trump saying that there's going to be more tariffs. I don't know if you guys saw, but like clockwork, every Friday when there's low liquidity in the markets and we're going into the weekends, there's been some kind of like Trump announcement. The first week it was the Trump coin launch. The second week it was tariffs. The third week it was tariffs. And the fourth week, tariffs. But this time, even the tariffs couldn't do anything to the Bitcoin price. And that's because people are like factoring the or understanding that what Trump is doing is he's just bullying people to come to the table. And once they're at the table, they negotiate exactly what they want. And he did that to the UK. I saw a little announcement by the UK today that they were going to relent on the whole tariff discussion. Anyway, regardless of what's happening in Bitcoin, when you look at the altcoins, very different story when you look at the altcoin market. Bitcoin has this price equilibrium thing where it doesn't move up, it doesn't move down, it's in the range. In fact, if I look at Bitcoin since the elections, so this is here the election pump, this is the 4th of November. If I look at Bitcoin since the election, it's up 46.6%. That's not the case for altcoins, right? If you look at the last month on altcoins, and you just pop like all the anomalies. What's XCN?
Oxycoin.
Okay, but let's pop it. Okay, and if you take out Trump coin and you take out Ultima coin, pretty much like most of the coins are red in the last month, and they're not a little bit red. These are the top 100 coins, and they're down. Yeah, Virtual is down 60%. Athena is down 45%. WorldCoin is down 40%. Render is down 37%. This is pretty much what our portfolios look like. We went on vacation, we were rich, we came back thinking we're going to have the time of our lives. We're going into altcoin season, and then bam, we get this garbage, right? That's what's happening at the moment. And so whereas Bitcoin is still up and still holding a 46% run in this market, somebody actually analyzed the altcoins. And he actually pointed out something very interesting. He said, What he did was he analyzed all the altcoins and he went back to the election day. And what he realized was that over 70% of altcoins are now trading lower than they were before the election. So the altcoins have taken us back to the Biden era, right? So like we had the Biden era, and then the altcoins, we had a little bit of a pump in the altcoins, but the altcoins have completely retraced their pumps. And now we're back in the Biden era. And the Biden era is scaring a whole lot of people, because a lot of people are now starting to realize exactly what the Biden era was about. Some of us saw it. We kept telling you guys that Biden is evil, Kamala Harris is evil, it could never ever happen. I even managed to convince Adrian to vote Republican, because you were like, hell-bent Democrat, bro, I can't vote Trump. Tell us the story, bro. Did you finally turn?
No comment.
You see, now he's not commenting. He's not, you know, before I used to sit him and say, Adrian, please, bro, you got to vote Trump. I'm like, bro, I can't vote Trump. I'm like, Adrian, please, bro, you can't keep voting Biden. Now the truth is starting to come out about these Democrats and people are starting to get very angry.
It's just in from the Department of Government Efficiency. In the past 48 hours, Health and Human Services has canceled 62 contracts worth $182 million. Dollars. The contracts were entirely for administrative expenses, to include $168,000 contract for an Anthony Fauci exhibit at the National Institute.
So I don't know about you, but if I was in America and I was paying tax and they were going to use my tax dollars to put up a statue of Anthony Fauci, $168,000, I'd go absolutely crazy. The other thing that would drive me absolutely mad, and we knew this was happening, but we had no proof. Now we have the proof, is that the Democrats, using USAID, were actually funding all these medias, all these like the New York Times and Politico. The Democrats were actually using USAID to fund these to smear the Republicans. I don't know if you heard this, but I'll play what Chamath actually
media.
Said.
Who are supposed to be this intermediary layer that's totally objective between the government and the people, were not independent at all, but had all kinds of hidden incentives, $8 million to Politico, several million dollars to the BBC. I think it's important to ask what's going on. And by the way, that also has historical context. This is exactly what happened in the 60s and 70s.
So where basically all the American taxpayer dollars in the Biden administration were basically used to fund media organizations to smear the Republicans. Anyway, let's not go there. Let's not make this a political show, because this is still a crypto show. Gerrit says, great interview yesterday. You guys like that helicopter story, right? That I got so many comments like about the helicopter story. If you didn't listen to my interview yesterday with Fairfair, you should go listen. I mean, it was quite a lot of fun. Anyway, let's go back to it. So as I was saying, this guy has gone and analyzed the percentage of tokens and that have given back their gains. And 70% of tokens have given back their pre-election, the post-election gains, right? There are only a handful of tokens that have actually recovered. So here's a handful of tokens that have actually recovered. So if you were holding these tokens, you still got some kind of pump since the elections. But if you weren't holding these tokens, chances are that you've been absolutely, absolutely wrecked. Like Solana's done well. Sui's still done well. Chainlink has been one that's really done well, because Chainlink, the whole thing of tokenization of assets and a friendly SEC has made Chainlink go. Actually, what I did was I pulled the CoinGecko statistics. I took the, you know, you can do a historical snapshot. And I went to the 3rd of November. If you look at Chainlink on the 3rd of November, it was the 14th biggest asset at $10.76. If you look at it today, it's the 11th biggest asset at $18.92. So what you can see is the majors actually held on to their gains. The real world asset ones held on to their gains. And pretty much the top guys held on to their gains. But the thing is, when you go under the top guys, when you go like below, say, the top 20, then it starts getting a little bit brutal. So you look at Near Protocol was on the third was 369. I think today it's at about 320. Let's quickly just see where Near is today. I think it's somewhere around 320, 322. So that's where the mess actually starts. Aptos was at $8.19. Today Aptos is at $6.15. So you can see that a lot of the tokens have been absolutely, absolutely obliterated, sending us back into the Biden era. So now we're back into the Biden era. And so that's why I say that this cycle is a little bit different. This cycle is actually a little bit different. And you should be playing defense at the moment. When I say playing defense at the moment, you don't want to be trying to score goals at the moment because now the momentum is not on your side. What you need to do is you need to play defense until we get some kind of sign that the altcoin market is going to recover. I'm going to show you a sign today, but I'm not sure that that's enough of a sign to say that we're going into alt season. I'm playing, as I said to you, I'm playing defense at the moment. And my definition of defense is just basically holding tokens that look like this. This is pretty much what my main portfolio actually looks like now. Now, look, I do see a lot of people comparing this cycle to last cycle, and they may be right. I've got to be honest, they may be right. But I do want to talk to you about these comparisons, because I think a lot of the hopium that I'm getting on Twitter is around comparing this cycle to last cycle. Let's just look at last cycle, this cycle, last cycle, this cycle. And I agree with you. There may be some merit in actually comparing last cycle to this cycle. I see Chris Boniski says, I don't think this is a sign of a cycle type, rather a mid-bull pullback that makes everyone question. God, feels a lot more like April, May, June of 2021 to me, where things fell 50 to 80% depending on the coin. Many said it was over and then we ripped. And he may be right, and I really hope he's right, because I've got a lot of altcoins. And I see people pointing these BTC dominance and ETH versus BTC charts. I see people talking about others and all comparing it to the previous cycle. Here's a chart that we made looking at the previous cycle. The truth is, I just want to talk about this previous cycle thing, right? Guys, we've only had two cycles, right? Our entire data set is two cycles. And to make matters even worse, those two cycles were very different in nature, right? There were some similarities in the cycle in that the altcoins started to fly, but this cycle had a double top, or had a top and then slightly down, double top. This cycle didn't. So I think relying on data from the previous cycles and saying that that's gospel and that's why we should have an alt season and that's why things should run is probably one of the biggest mistakes that we're going to make in crypto in the cycle. Yes, there is merit in analyzing alt cycles, but if you base your entire thesis on what happened in the previous cycles, then the truth is you probably would have missed the second pump over here. Then the truth is you probably would have missed a lot of things. So I don't know if this cycle is the same as other cycles. I do say from a fundamentals point of view that it does feel like we are at a kind of bottom. Sentiment has bottomed. Leverage has bottomed. You know, I saw this tweet yesterday and I went and checked it out. It's actually true. The average funding rate across top three exchanges dropped to zero. Basically means you can buy things for free. You can borrow money to buy tokens for free, right? And so that tells me usually that there is no interest and that there is no leverage in the market. And that's usually a very, very, very good sign that we're going towards the bottom. The truth is, though, that all of this is short-term measures. And the only way that we're actually going to get an alt season or a true altcoin recovery is when people are willing to take risks. And people are only going to be willing to take risks when there's increased liquidity in the market. And there's only going to be increased liquidity in the market when the Fed starts quantitative easing. That we know for sure. That's pretty much maths, right? Like that's not like comparing this cycle to last cycle. It's pretty much maths. Math says when people feel richer, they're willing to, when people have more money, they feel richer. When they feel richer, they are more open to taking risks. And that is when people go higher up the risk curve or lower down the altcoin curve, right? That is the one thing that where I do think we're going to be the same as every other cycle. And so the question that we've been asking ourselves is, when is quantitative easing going to start, right? Because what we know is here. So if you look at this chart over here, this is the chart that I showed you guys last week. When you have quantitative easing, Bitcoin and ETH actually start running and the Bitcoin dominance actually starts dropping because people start feeling rich and they start like taking gambles on their money. The problem is that right now we're still in quantitative tightening. Then there's like this gap between where we stop quantitative tightening and then we wait for the Fed to switch on quantitative easing. So it's like a neutral period. And then nothing actually happens, right? And so what we're looking for now is we're looking to say, when will there actually be QE? Now, the truth is, I don't know exactly when QE is going to start. But what I do know is that we may get something very, very, very similar to QE, and it may actually happen very, very soon. Much, much, much sooner than you expect, right? And I'm going to show you what that actually is, right? In order to understand what this thing actually is, what you got to understand is you got to understand the background of where the USA is right now, right? So you all know that the USA has debt of $36 trillion, right? And what you also know is that the US has what they call a debt ceiling. A debt ceiling is basically like an internal agreement that the United States has amongst each other, the parties in the United States have amongst each other, where they have decided to cap the amount of debt that the United States can take. And in the last deadlock, they managed to increase the amount of debt to $36 trillion, right? And so now the U.S. is in a situation where it has $36 trillion and a little bit of a little bit more debt, and it can't take any more debt, right? So the U.S. cannot take any more debt right now. And so the question then becomes, well, if the U.S. can't take any more debt right now, then how is it going to spend? Because remember, the reason why the U.S. actually takes this debt is so so the federal government can pay all of its obligations. It's got to pay all its workers. It's got to build all the projects, all the roads, all everything else that's being built right now, right? That's all funded with debt. And now the U.S. can't take on any more debt. So what's going to happen? Well, what's going to happen possibly is a little bit of QE that's going to come into the market. And the reason why that happens is because there's this thing called a Treasury General Account. And that Treasury General Account has $830 billion inside this Treasury General Account. Now, how does it work? It says the U.S. government hits its self-imposed debt ceiling, $36 trillion, in late January. This means that the Treasury cannot take on any more debt until a new debt ceiling agreement is reached, which has historically meant involved raising or suspending the debt ceiling. So the Treasury has been deploying emergency measures so far, and they spent a total of $400 billion in these emergency measures. That's how we got to $36 trillion, $462 billion. I can't even say these numbers. It's more money than Josh has got and Hardest combined. So the Treasury has been deploying emergency measures. On Friday the 7th, the government had used up more than 60% of the measures and only had $133 billion left, right? So now the problem is that means that probably coming this week or the week after, the Treasury will be forced into taking money out of the Treasury General Account until such time as a new debt ceiling is reached. So what does the TGA drawdown actually mean? The TGA can be thought of as the government's bank account. It's almost like the government's slash account. Is it called a slash account where you can dig into it when you run out of money, right? It has about $830 billion in this slash account. The money is currently sitting idle at the Fed, so it's completely removed from the money markets. And basically, if the government begins to draw down the Treasury General account, this is an injection of new liquidity into markets. It works similar to QE. It's not exactly QE, but it has exactly the same effect as QE, because what they do is they take this money from this dormant bank account, which has been like off the books. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like when you're married and then you tell your wife, you showed her all the bank accounts, but then you've got like that one hidden bank account, right? And then like you keep going out to like vacations and you keep buying yourself stuff from this new bank account. It's like money appearing out of nowhere, right? And she keeps asking like, where did you get this money from? And like you never answer it. That's exactly what this is. It's like a hidden bank account that this Treasury has. And now that the credit card limit has been reached on the joint credit card between you and your wife, now you can spend from this other account, right? And that's exactly what's going to happen now, because the Fed now needs to start spending from this account. Now, let's quickly understand what happened the last time that people touched this Treasury, this TGA, right? So the last time that we touched this TGA, the markets actually started running. Here, I'll show you a better chart over here. There's the TGA, and you can see what happened the last time that the Treasury General Account was depleted, or was it went down. It went down from, okay, much higher, 1.6 trillion, all the way close to zero. And you can see that Bitcoin and the altcoins actually pumped. And so now, effectively, the government's got this hidden account, and this hidden account, they're going to have to release this hidden account to carry on paying, and that's going to add about $1 trillion, $830 billion, of liquidity into the markets. And remember what we said. We said that if we want the markets to actually run, we need QE. So look, this is not exactly QE, but it's a measure to take us on to until we actually get the real QE back in the market. Now, a lot of people ask, okay, cool, that's good. But when are we getting the real QE back in the market? So I did read this from Kabisi Data. And he says that, look, when you look at the structure of the markets, the Fed's reverse repo facility is down $2.5 trillion from its peak in December, which means that the U.S. is borrowing so much debt to fund the deficit that all the liquidity in the market is basically being depleted, right? And when the liquidity in the market is actually being depleted, this is where the liquidity is right now, then effectively it means that very, very, very soon we're going to need to get into QE so that you can put more liquidity into the market. So what this is showing us, just to summarize, is that, look, maybe QE is actually a lot closer than we actually think. Maybe, based on the data that I've actually showed you. In the interim, though, we're going to get a mini QE, which is not exactly a QE, but has exactly the same effect as quantitative easing. And that may start pretty much immediately. It's going to be like a forced spend, right? So because the US is so much in debt, can't take any more debt. And so now they have to bring the slush fund and start putting money that actually didn't exist on the books into the market. And so we could actually get some kind of altcoin recovery. Now, how long will this take? Well, this is going to start almost immediately. But remember, it takes time for the money to actually flow into the markets. So I reckon within the next 30 to 60 days, we could actually see that happening. And then remember, within 30 to 60 days, we also have the next FOMC meeting, which is on the 19th of March, which is 39 days away. And that at that FOMC, I guess there's not going to be a rate cut, but they may just say that they are stopping QT. And then we're going to get this like lull period. Now, remember, the lull period can be quite long. Like in this case, the lull period was about a year, year and a half. Well, it can be quite short. So then we're going to get the lull period. And then we may actually start getting the quantitative easing. So what I'm trying to say to you is, look, this cycle is not going to be the same as all the other cycles. In all the other cycles, we've got this rampant altcoin season between January and April. I guess we've now realized that ain't going to happen. This cycle actually is different, right? So if this cycle actually is different, what is going to probably happen is you got to hang in there for probably another month to month and a half. And it may be painful because we may get like some chop on Bitcoin. And we know that chop on Bitcoin isn't so good for the altcoins. Just look at the markets now. See again, chop on Bitcoin, not so good for the altcoins. But you got to survive the next month and a half to take us a little bit closer to QE. When we get to the QE, then I think that solves all the problems. But until then, we need to wait. Until then, we need to wait. And we need to watch the economic data that comes out, right? And I think speaking of economic data that's coming out, Wednesday is a big day. It's Wednesday, right? Wednesday is inflation day. So remember the last inflation numbers were, oh, come on, man. The last inflation numbers were 2.9%. Okay, so you got to take it from me because my thing's not opening. Investing. Okay, there we go. So the last inflation numbers were 2.9%. It looks like when I look at the Cleveland Fed, and these guys are pretty good at forecasting inflation, they're saying that inflation is going to be about 2.85%. So it looks like we're going to get three readings in a row at 2.9%. Here we go. So it does look like three readings in a row are going to be, okay, so 2.7, 2.9, 2.9. So I think we're going to get 2.9. If we get anything above 2.9, big problem. If we get below 2.9, great, the markets will rally, but I don't think we're going to get below 2.9. There's no reason why inflation should be coming down. Okay, so let's hope we get this little quantitative easing substitute very soon, because I don't know about you, but my altcoin bags are burning. How are you guys feeling? Not well. You're not feeling well. Josh, how are you feeling? Not well. Adrian, how are you feeling? How are your altcoin bags?
Sideways.
But you're feeling good?
I think we will have a pickup. It's just a matter of time.
Adrian's always the optimist.
Yes. Sure.
Yeah. You know how many people are watching the show now? 4,969. Right now. 69. It's happening right now. Anyway, let's talk about the other news of the day. The other, well, Sheldon fired. No, Sheldon's daughter is sick today. So he's at the hospital with it. I don't know. I saw this. I know you know this, but FTX are starting to pay people back for like, you know, if you had money in FTX, because they managed to recover so much money, FTX are actually starting to repay people, right? And so they're repaying you based on the price at the time when FTX went down, right? So FTX, bad news, FTX starts repaying 98% of users at Bitcoin 20,000. Good news, if you had one ETH on FTX, you still get $2,500. That is to say that when, could that be true? Let's just quickly look at this. Could that be that when FTX went down, ETH is at the same price as when FTX went down? That would be quite a thing. Let's see. When did FTX go down? Yeah, this is, it was November, wasn't it?
We were at Solana Breakpoint in Lisbon.
So it was 20, it was 22. No, it can't be that low. It was 1.6. Okay, so the tweet was facetious, but. I do think that we have a problem in the structure of ETH. And the reason why I say I think we have a problem in the structure of ETH is that ETH has become very, 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 very responsive. Crazy, crazy, crazy responsive. And that's not something that you want from the second biggest crypto asset. Like if you think about investors in Bitcoin and ETH, a lot of them want a lot more stability than the crypto markets, right? So you look at like Bitcoin. You have Trump threatening sanctions. Bitcoin trades at 96,500. You don't have Trump threatening sanctions. Bitcoin trades at 96,500. It's pretty stable, right? ETH, on the other hand, has become extremely, extremely, extremely responsive to market movements. When Trump announced the tariffs, the tariffs on Friday, you see how ETH was the one that hit it. And this guy says, Trump announces a 25% tariff on steel and aluminium tomorrow, and ETH went down. And someone says, is ETH made of aluminium? Because it's just crazy how responsive ETH has actually become. And to add to all the troubles, and the reason why it's happening is very simple. After this liquidation, people realized how quickly ETH could actually go down. ETH went from 3,000 to 2,000 in 24 hours. And people realized just how fragile ETH actually is, right? Everyone got liquidated. Everyone's realizing how fragile ETH actually is. And now to make ETH's problem even more, if you look at what's going on under the dress of ETH, what you'll realize is that the institutional traders, the big hedge funds, have currently opened the biggest short position in history when it comes to Ethereum. Now, generally, when you hear a short position, like one of two thoughts comes to your mind. One is it could be the biggest short squeeze of all time. And to that end, okay, here's the data. This guy says bros have built the largest ETH position in history while spot ETH ETF flows look like this, right? So you look at the spot flows on ETH. It's actually had great flows since the 28th of January. It's had like great flows relative to ETH. Someone said, last week, Bitcoin ETF recorded net inflows of 200 million and ETH net inflows of 420 million. So on the one hand, you're saying, hold on, if there are spot buyers and there are futures sellers, then it's a race between the spot buyers and the future sellers, right? You say, okay, there could be a massive, massive, massive short squeeze coming up now. That's one of the options. The other option is that the short people, the people that are short, know why they're short. And they have a reason why they're short. And we just don't know why they're short. But you know what happens? It's going to resolve one way or another. And it's going to resolve with either the biggest short squeeze in history, because it's the biggest short position requires the biggest short squeeze, right? So either the situation resolves itself with the biggest short squeeze in history, or the shorters land up making a lot of money. Now look, long term, said to you before, I don't understand why ETH exists. You can do everything better on Solana. Like, so simple. Every builder that I speak to says Solana, Solana, Solana. Even the guys that are building on the ETH layer 2s, they're like, look, the layer 2 experience is not as good as the layer 1 experience. So long term, my thesis is definitely Solana. That's why I was like, when I made this portfolio, I was like, fuck ETH. Honestly, I don't want to be holding ETH. It's Bitcoin, Sol, Sui. The only ETH play that I've got is Aerodrome, and that is like a play on Coinbase and Base and whatever else. The other way of looking at this massive inflow is what this guy says. He says the bar chart is screaming the largest ETH short position in history, but it's clickbait. He says, and the reason why he says it's clickbait is because if you look at they're looking at just one category. But he also says that this once happened on Bitcoin. The second, these massive shorts also showed up in the Bitcoin for the same group. And guess what? Bitcoin outperformed ETH. And that was a massive short squeeze phenomenon. So that's, you got to look at exactly what's happening here. And you got to take a view here as to either these guys know or these guys don't know and they're going to get wrecked. I do want to remind you that the people that are taking these short positions are not the crypto bros. These are the institutional. These are CFTC, CME. This is like the institutional guys are taking the short on ETH. And It's not the crypto bros. These are not people that know anything that's happening inside on the inside of ETH. These are the institutions. So you got to ask yourself why they're actually doing it. There is also one other reason why they may be doing it. And that's when there's an arbitrage between spot plus staking revenue and the future. So let me explain to you how that works. You can buy ETH, you can stake ETH, and you can get a return by staking ETH. Now, I mean, the return is quite small, but probably worth talking about if you're talking about Wall Street. So you say, okay, well, if I stake my ETH, I'm getting a reward rate of 3%. So if I buy ETH plus I stake ETH, I get the ETH plus 3%. But because funding is negative right now, when you short the future, right, because of the negative funding, it creates an arbitrage. And so that also may be one of the reasons why this is actually happening. So this is what you actually got to look out for. It's not as simple as it sounds. The one thing that I can say about ETH is that it is crunch time for ETH. ETH has to do something. It has to bounce. Otherwise, people are just going to give up and give up and give up on this asset. I think this is what the charts are telling us. Yeah, but I think the story is much bigger than the actual charts. The good news is that the ETH Foundation has finally learned that you don't actually have to sell your ETH. What you can do is you can put your ETH as collateral on Aave and you can actually borrow against it. And so now they're not selling hundreds of millions of dollars worth of ETH like they do every single month. They're just staking it on Aave and taking loans against it. Congratulations to the ETH Foundation. Finally they stop wrecking the market. Finally. Speaking of wrecking the market, Dave Portnoy launched a token. Jail Stool. Okay, I was going to say that this thing's going down to zero, but it went to 200 million. It's going to 60 million. I reckon this thing goes to 10 million by the end of March. Another grifter coming to crypto to make money off crypto people. And you know who the idiots are? The people that actually bought it and didn't sell it. But that didn't happen in Frontrunners, because you know what happened in Frontrunners? Joe called it. And you know what happened in Frontrunners? They did a 30x on the weekend. Now, how many of you have done a 30x this weekend? Tudor, you didn't do a 30x. I heard you were partying on Friday night. Where did you go on Friday night? Tell us where you went.
Long Street.
You went to Long Street.
Yes.
You could have done a 30x on the Dave Portnoy token and you were out partying.
Yes, exactly. That's one of the regrets I have.
You should join Frontrunners, because Frontrunners gives you everything that you need to make 30x's on the weekend. And you know what? The waiting list is open, sir. We may actually accept you. It actually isn't open, but since I've said it on the show, can we ask Amy to please put a link to anyone who wants to join Frontrunners? If you join it, and if you don't dig it in there, and if you're not making returns, you can get it. You can request a full refund within the first month. How's that? That's a good offer. Do you know what? There's another very, very, very good offer. So remember, I always say to you, I'm very wary of the exchanges we partner with, right? Because like I know exchanges can be like scammy people. I get it. So I went to Bybit, who are our exchange partners, and I said, look, guys, a lot of our community got wrecked in the liquidation flash the other day. And what I want you guys to do is I want you to make whole the people that actually got wrecked. Okay, now, like, it's not their fault. You took the leverage. If you got wrecked, you took the leverage. I just want to remind you, you were the one who actually took the leverage. But I've actually got Bybit to restore some accounts. Now, how many accounts are they going to restore? Let me just see what we managed to negotiate for you guys. I don't know how many they're going to store, but I can tell you there's a link below. Let me just open the link below because people don't know where the link is. Okay, let's click on, you can just click on the show. Let me just open. Okay, so you can see here, if you got liquidated, then just go to this form over here and just tell us. So if you were signed up using any crypto banter link and chosen by Bybit, we will refund you the account that got liquidated. I mean, who does that? I mean, that's a good thing, right? This is what happens when you deal with a good exchange. They actually care about their people. So they will reinstate your account to before the liquidation of that Trump liquidation. Just put your ID and everything in there. It'll ask you the ID and then they'll make a call. I'll tell you guys who was actually reinstated. This is the importance of dealing with good exchanges. This is the importance of dealing with exchanges that actually care, and Bybit actually care, and we care about our community, and that's exactly why we did it. You know, Bybit stopped sponsoring the Formula One. They're not sponsoring next year. No, but you know who is? Gate. I'm not kidding, bro. Gate.io, you know, Gate is another exchange. They're now sponsoring the Formula One. So I need to go to the Formula One races. So I've partnered up with Gate. See that? You see how I did that? So they've got a lot of altcoins. And also now for you guys, they've got an amazing sign-up bonus structure. So here's how it works. You sign up, you get a trading bonus. If you deposit $100, you get 10. If you deposit $500, you get 30. If you deposit $1,000, you get 50. Plus, if you trade a certain amount of futures, you get more money. So there's a link below. It basically spells out everything that you need to know. So if you want to go and sign up, because I think it's actually quite a good exchange. It's been around for a while. It stood the test of time, which is important. And it also lists a lot of altcoins, which is also important. Anyway, I have hot yoga to go to. See you guys again tomorrow. Until then, trade well, my friends.